please.
I have to come there, okay?
Yeah, please. And all the others, please. You do. I would like to ask whether, I guess there is one prepared discussion. I don't know whether there are many others, I don't know. One prepared discussion?
Yes, can I?
Okay, now let me... This is a prepared discussion. I take this opportunity to say that all of you can send prepared discussions to one of the papers, or you may have already sent, or you can send them until September 15, and then the authors will have until September 29 to respond to this. And the written discussions, together with the closures, will be part of the proceedings that we'll prepare with my colleague Tasos Bakirdzis. So, this discussion is made by Mr. Yannis Voyadzakis, former PPC director, and it's a discussion on the paper presented by Yannis Kabouris, Operation of the Electrical System of Crete in Interconnection with the Mainland Grid Stability Study. And why am I making the presentation is because I put some pressure on Yannis to give us his experience of the design of the interconnection he did in the 1980s, and he put his condition was that I make the presentation, so here I am. Okay, so first I'd like, from Yannis Vagazakis and my behalf, congratulate the authors because they did a really interesting and study about the stability issue, and also they came to some very interesting conclusions that I will refer to at the end of my presentation of the discussion. But the effect here is to be a little bit more, let's say, fair to the work done in the 80s. The idea, at that time, both the feasibility and all the technical aspects were examined in great detail, and alternative submarine tracks were investigated as far as the seabed goes, and the initial tender was ready to be made for, I'm speaking about the 80s now, for 300 megawatts, two pole, two times 150 megawatt connection of Crete. So if this had gone through, now we would have a small but definite interconnection between Crete and the mainland. Now, instead of that, the tender was prepared for double the size, and it was never concluded. So this was the problem. Somewhere there was a problem that stopped it, and according to my point of view, I'll tell it at the end as my comment, is that size has to do with it. Now, the proposal was for a submarine cable of only 150 kilometers compared to 380 of the other presentation you heard today. And there was converter stations inland, and there was also a part of overhead DC lines. They investigated first a shortest track, which was going through the islands of Kythira and Antikythira, and this was dropped because of a very difficult situation, bad seabed morphology between Antikythira and Crete, so this was not selected, but a slightly easter track was selected that had a very nice slope, not exceeding 25%, and all the geological aspects of the seabed were perfectly acceptable. So this is a route that has been investigated, and it is clear from all problems, geological or other. Comparing the feasibility in the 80s, we just compare with the Greece-Italy connection that was a few years after in the 90s, was designed and finally was made. And this had a much worse slope of 50%. and the submarine cable was slightly larger, and the sea depth was similar, about 1,000 meters. Now, with regard to the solution that the paper adopts, the presented paper, of course, is a much larger connection, 2 × 400. Use voltage source converter, which is, of course, much better technology. But the length is very longer, which means this solution is more expensive. And, of course, the sea depth and the maximum slope have still to be determined because this is a new, totally new track going close to the island of Milos. So coming to my comments and then a question, sorry for maybe taking a few more time than I should. I believe that these are my comments, and I believe that experience should teach us. And one of the lessons that I get from the previous experience is that oversizing is not the best solution. And coming to the question, in the presentation, there was mention of 55% utilization of the cable. This comes close to 440. So why make a 800 megawatt solution for much lower power? And the second was, which I consider a very interesting conclusion, that some generation, this is the last point here, interconnection of grid should go on, but even then there must be local generation on the island. So if you have an estimate from what you have seen, how much that generation should be. Thank you for your attention and sorry for taking some time.
So, okay, I cannot answer everything, of course. What I want to say is, first of all, for the question of the length, of course, it's a much more expensive project, and the capacity of the link actually is something that was debated with the regulator and other authorities and the ministry, because there was a lot of pressure from IPPs of, that want to install wind farms to increase even further this interconnection. There were some opinions to go to 2,000 megawatts or 3,000 megawatts and 1,000 megawatts. And to our opinion, this one size, the one opted actually 2 × 350 megawatts, is something that very well fits to the needs to supply on a cheaper way the islands and the load for the next decade. This is the answer to the first question. The other one is that, of course, there was an initial design to go to the Peloponnese Peninsula, and it's a much cheaper project, of course, but now the situation has been changed a lot. Now we have a lot of renewables also in Peloponnese. We have a new combined cycle power plant in Megalopolis, which actually we cannot absorb the whole of its power because there are some transmission projects missing. And at the end of the day, this project in such a case will be very much connected and very much related to another 400 kV new transmission connecting the Peloponnese Peninsula to the mainland again. So, it will be a project under a lot of conditions, and we treat that it is not a good way to proceed, because the one project will impact on the other, and after that, everything comes very gray. This is some rough answer to these questions. And of course, it's difficult to say what is the best, to my opinion, the best sizing. But what we have in mind as a transmission operator is that we have to opt the solution that fits to the needs of the loads, and also to accommodate all the wind farms that have firm connection terms, and that leads to this size. Thank you.
Thank you. Some other answer or comment on this question?
Other question? I have a question about this
the first say your name on the microphone so that it's recorded.
Corsi Sandro from Italy.
Yeah, of course, it was not possible to follow everything in such a short time, but actually we do the same here. And if you notice, the contingencies and the cases we examine are rather extreme. Yeah, there are some extreme cases. In most of the cases, what you said is valid. All the variations of the load can be actually undertaken by the HVDC link. It's true, yeah.
Hi. Yes, thank you. Fernando Alvarado. Since I live a good part of the year in Hawaii these days, I am extremely interested in this session, obviously because of the renewables and the island nature of this, so I hope to take a lot out of this session. A problem that has not been recognized and, you know, openly, it has been recognized openly in the greater penetration of renewables is what was brought up in a couple of the papers and has to do with inertia. And not only just inertia in general, I mean, one of the effects of renewables is that they have no inertia. And we're not talking of longer term storage, we're talking of the effect on contingencies and recovery. And what I am asking really is anybody seriously looking at inertia enhancing opportunities, either actual inertia or what I call artificial inertia? You can create a lot of artificial inertia with the right kinds of equipment. And another comment along those lines is be very careful when you ask about variable speed drives, because unless you program them properly, they actually work against you, not for you. They can create a problem and not solve a problem. So in general, I wanted to see if, rather than load shedding, which is an extreme form of inertia management, I'm wondering if anybody wants to really address the issue of inertia as a necessary component of greater penetration of renewables. Any other panelists?
Yeah, I have not the complete answer, of course. Yeah, I agree with you. And I think it was very well, it was mentioned that actually what we connect here is a very huge, actually infinite inertia to a system of very low inertia. Okay, but we didn't examine any other methods of increasing the inertia in CRET. We made such a conventional, typical study for that.
Just to add, I'm Nikos Akelaridis, one of the authors of the paper. Just to say, I agree with this, and we have shown the effect of the low inertia in one scenario that I have shown, the substitution of some conventional power plants with hybrid power plants, and you have seen that the fact that when adding generators and with smaller inertia, the effect in the system stability and security gets worse. That just to say, just I want to agree with you, and just it's one of the examples that we have shown in our presentation.
Okay, maybe you can try. You can try a flywheel or something. Is that what we mean, or maybe yes? Of course, transient stability is a problem with inertia. The way is the question is, and I don't have the answer: how to create the inertia that is missing.
Okay. There are creative ways of saying, once you recognize the problem, that inertia is an important component of greater penetration of renewables, now you can begin thinking creatively. For example, you can run hydro plants without water. That provides inertia. Power plants that are not using much fuel, just because they are rotating. Also provide incentives to customers to use the smart grid in smart ways. Appliances that are frequency sensitive, things of that sort. Just all I'm proposing is people got to begin recognizing this as a problem that will really help greater penetration of renewables more than many other things that people are looking at. That's my only comment.
Along the same lines? It's along the same lines?
Yeah, I would like a comment on
yeah, but
my comment is yours. Mine is
yours. He was the first.
Okay, I also can okay, João Peças Lopes, University of Porto. I also can comment on the same lines, although my first comment would not be exactly on the topic. Of course, that inertia is a critical issue, especially in isolated systems with a lot of renewable generation. As it has been already been pointed out here, it is possible to synthesize inertia and have it, for instance, respond to the derivative of frequency versus time. And this is presently being used and being developed in some wind generators, for instance. So it is possible to do it in some way. But my question and comment to the panelists is the following. Okay.
Yes, Jim Lyons, retired General Electric. At GE wind turbines actually do that, and derivative of frequency. This is really an issue, a standards issue. The wind industry in 2002 went through a huge change on low voltage ride-through after some major blackouts in northern Germany, and instituted the solar world in the United States and Germany is going through that same revolution in standards right now. There is no requirement for virtual inertia, however, and with increased penetration, that has to happen, to your point. If you don't program those renewables, you make things much worse, because inherently they'll act with no inertia in any converter-connected system. So that's it's an essential thing that has to happen. Standards boards have not addressed this as of yet.
Okay, thank you. So now you go with your question.
So, but then, as I said, I have a comment and a question to you. That is, we are experimenting a similar situation in the islands of Azores and in Madeira, where consumption has been decreasing lately due to the economic crisis. And there was a large investment on renewable generation, so on wind generation, PV, and on geothermal. Geothermal is here a little bit different because geothermal is like a nuclear power plant, doesn't like to participate in frequency control, for instance. But the problem that we have now, and that the local system operator is trying to find out, and we are working with them to find this solution, is to look at generation curtailment, or at least to limit generation for those operating conditions where we are forecasting extreme severe changes, for instance, of renewable generation. So in those cases, and because it is necessary that those decisions are transparent and afterwards they can be audited, we are developing a procedure for the TSO for them to decide when to curtail and in this way to make the system more robust. So I would like to ask if you have not considered this possibility in Crete. Thank you.
Yanis Kaboulis. We have not considered that in Crete, but as a general answer, I think that in Europe, what we have opted as TSOs is to ask for some reserves from wind turbines for the time being. And this will be a regulation, I think, from 2015 on. I don't know.
I may say that, for instance, in Spain...
They do it already, maybe.
Yes,
yeah.
In Spain you do it already.
Yeah, what I told you...
But in Spain, generation curtailment is a reality.
Yeah, but what I say is that this will be a European standard probably from 2015 on.
Yes, but this exists.
Okay. Yeah, of course. In Denmark also.
If I can comment on this, George Gross, we had, for example, at PG&E, where I worked for nearly 20 years, we had contracts with geothermal, very good contracts. And they had negotiated a long time before renewables started very, very rigid contracts where basically we had to run those units. So there are questions basically in terms of how you negotiate those contracts. If those contracts are negotiated independent of everything else, then you could try anything you want, but it becomes a legal case. So you have to be very careful because we are very, very unwillingly are going to curtail wind or solar because we want that energy. So at this point, it becomes a big, big match, but the economics are very, very important also.
Okay, Janusz Białek, Durham University. So coming back to Fernando's question, so Fernando, if you want to learn more about it, I think you should move to another part of the world, which is almost as sunny as Hawaii, that's Ireland. Actually, the Irish are already having that problem, because Ireland is a very interesting example, because it's a small island, relatively small island, with a high penetration of wind. And they have done studies, system studies, and they have discovered that if the instantaneous system penetration of wind over demand is more than 50%, they may lose the system if there is a contingency. So at the moment they are shedding wind, if that happens usually at night, when there is a windy night, demand is low, they have over 50% and they shed already load. And they are doing already studies on it. The next one in the line is Britain, where I come from, well, where I work now. And National Grid is doing already studies that are looking not only at the question what they call synthetic inertia, which you are mentioning, that means you can program DFIX using their control in order to provide frequency control. But interestingly, because both Britain and Ireland are connected to Europe and the surrounding countries by the DC links, you can only also theoretically program DC converters in order also to provide frequency response. So there are ways around it. No one has done it in the world. There are, of course, risks, but people are working on it. So let me assure you that people are working on it. Actually, with high penetration of renewables, you've mentioned inertia problems, but there's also a dynamic stability problem. And this is what the Irish have discovered, that the very high penetrations, actually, there's a problem with small signal stability. For low levels of wind, actually, it's well known that induction generators are quite stable. That means that the small signal stability improves. But for very high penetration of renewables, the dynamic stability is a problem. And generalizing the comment which I have made, there have been a number of studies around the world, in the States and in Europe and et cetera, where that saying that you can go with renewables to very high penetration levels, about 80-90% and et cetera. And I'm saying at the moment you can't. There is a lot of research needed to be done in order to overcome this very important technical barrier to penetrations. People think that the main barrier for penetration is balancing. We know how to do balancing. It's no big deal. We've been doing it for ages. But we don't know how what to do is how to provide frequency response. It's not only wind. Of course, PVs are even worse because they're power electronics. They have no inertia whatsoever. At least wind has some inertia behind it, and you can make use of it. With PVs, there's no inertia behind it. It means it doesn't provide anything at all. So if there are any authors of wind penetration, renewable penetration studies in the audience, please think about it, that before you go to very high penetration levels, you have to think how to overcome those very serious technical problems. Thank you.
Thank you. Some reaction from the floor? From the...
I agree fully.
Okay. 100%. So let's stop here. Let's go for a coffee. And then if there are some other questions, we can come back in the second part of the discussions. Okay. Thank you.